It's 2025, this is the year podcasting finds its groove, and this is how we make a podcast in South Africa.
How are you?
Hi everyone, and welcome to How to Make a Podcast in South Africa. This is the first episode of Season 2. In Season 2, I'm interviewing the members of the Guild about how they make a podcast in South Africa. I'm hoping that their success leaves some clues for the rest of us. Let me introduce our first guest for Season 2, Russell Wasserfull, producer of a wonderful show called A Table in the Corner. Here's what that sounds like.
Welcome to A Table in the Corner. I'm your host, Russell Wasserfull, and this is the second episode of 2025. This episode is about meat.
It's a show about the food industry in South Africa, and Russell talks to top chefs, suppliers, farmers, franchise owners, butchers, bakers, and anyone else who's in the business of food. Here in brief is the story of Russell's food journey.
We started at a sushi bar. Like madness. We opened a book, read some stuff, and opened a sushi bar. Didn't do very well, lasted about 4 months, and the critic Ann Stevens lambasted it. But, you know, we did that thing. And by a lot of journeys, found my way to Cape Town, where the center of food is, and started shooting food. I had a career as a commercial food photographer. I made a bunch of cookbooks. I was always very, very deeply into food. And read a lot about food. And my wife, who I met through shooting food, and we started working together. She was a chef and she became a food stylist. And we always spoke about opening a restaurant. So when we moved to Cape Town and we'd had the career as stylist-photographer couple, we got the opportunity one day to open a restaurant.
And that was the beginning of Table at Demay, right?
The Table at Demay. Exactly.
But while Russell and his wife were running the very successful and award-winning Table at Demay, disaster struck.
So I went and signed up for a refresher paragliding course. And on my seventh solo, I had a total canopy collapse on approach to landing. And I fell 20 meters and woke up 3 weeks later in hospital. Just it changed life completely because I was in an induced, I smashed my legs, my elbow, cracked my head open. And I was in intensive care, and unbeknownst to us, when I had that flight, when I had the accident, my wife was 5 weeks pregnant, and we didn't know. We'd been trying for 10 years and nothing, and we were told, like, ugh, never going to happen. And I woke up, well, when I woke up, it was 3 weeks later. So she was 8 weeks pregnant. And she was like, Russell, don't try to get up and walk because you'll fall down, your legs are broken, and I'm pregnant.
Surprise.
Surprise.
Okay, so that started a fairly lengthy rehabilitation process, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was in hospital for 5 months, and I had, while I was there, I had a lot of surgeries, 14, I think. And then afterwards, I kept on getting like infections, or I'd hurt myself in the gym trying to get fit again or whatever. So I've had a total, I think, to date of 26 surgeries as a result of that. But I can walk and have my legs.
Incredible. 26 surgeries. Okay. What did it do to you financially, to the restaurant, everything?
You know, it destroyed everything, didn't it? I mean, like as an example, the surgery that saved my right leg, which required an experimental internal prosthesis, like it got coded as a knee replacement by our medical aid. And so they paid out 22 grand. Just the surgeon's fee was 67.
Jeez.
We sold the Table at Demay because I wasn't running front of house. My wife and her brother tried to keep the boat afloat, but it wasn't the same sort of thing. I suppose we're getting back to your question about where the podcasting began, is that like I started writing again for a living because the very early days of my career was writing and before I took up photography. So I started writing again. I was writing social media, what have you. But it was very isolating. We were living in the Karoo, and then we moved back and we moved to Darling for a bit, and it was extreme. And I got completely cut off.
You sit down and you go, I need to reconnect. I need to produce something. How did you end up on a podcast, and how did you end up on the name?
Well, because of the massive distances that I was driving at the time, I started listening to podcasts in the car.
Okay, so you went back to writing to make a buck, and you were thinking about starting a podcast. But at first, you didn't try to start it for yourself. You pitched it to one of your clients. And then when they said no, time to tilted windmills again.
I thought, well, I want to do something creative, something new and challenging, and I want to be able to talk to people. So why don't I do a podcast? And clearly, the thing that I know about is food, or I think I do, you know. So I thought, and there's no food podcast, and no one's talking about Cape Town food and restaurants and people. Maybe I should just like, and I thought I'd do like 12, you know, and here we sit and I've done, I think, 100. And I really love it, and I'm obsessed with it. I've had to actually like discipline myself to only work on podcasts on Monday and Tuesday. The other 3 days and weekends are for billable hours, you know, but I'm allowed Monday and Tuesday.
Is Sunday night exciting and Monday morning is like, ooh, today's the day, and that kind of, does it give you that feeling?
Exactly. And then I get to go and speak. And like you say, I mean, you mentioned that I was like name drop or whatever the case, but a lot of the people I've worked with, George Jardine, I first did a story with Abigail Donnelly on him for Taste Magazine in like 2008 or something. And in 2014 or 15, and shot and wrote his cookbook. These are people that are mates.
A Table in the Corner has grown quickly, nearing 11,000 downloads since its launch in September 2023. It's attracting an audience of foodies and industry professionals and has won 2 awards in the South African Podcast Awards, a silver in the food, leisure and travel category, and a bronze for innovation and creativity. I think Russell's show is successful for many reasons, but I want to highlight 2 of them. Firstly, it's niche. It's a focused specific, not a fuzzy generalization. Secondly, Russell's an expert in his field with a strong network. He knows most of the top chefs in the country, and they know him. That means when he asks for an interview, he tends to get it, and his guests trust him with their stories.
Of course, I'm not naive. I've clicked that this is something that I could do and make more of a career of. But what's interesting is that it's not just necessarily about the numbers. It's not like these big podcasters who have 5 million followers, but it's just anybody listening to them prattle. I think, and it's been suggested to me by a couple of people in the sort of PR advertising marketing space that I have a very, very valuable audience because it's very concentrated around a particular topic.
And fine dining in general, it's not a fast food show.
It isn't.
Having listened to the show, you know, I've seen the growth of Table in the Corner. It's an engaged audience of highly valuable listeners who are in a niche. I mean, for any marketer will tell you it's ideal for some kind of partnership or sponsorship. We'll be right back after this short clip of our new awesome music. Okay, and we're back for part 2 of How to Make a Podcast in South Africa with Russell Wasserfall from A Table in the Corner. We're now picking up where we left off in production and post-production. So we know Russell's history, how he came to podcasting, the sequence of events that led him to create this show. But how does he make it? What success has he seen and what clues are there for the rest of us? So, Russell, how did you start producing the show? How did you actually get off the ground?
YouTube, really.
Right.
But I sort of, because I've been listening to podcasts, I knew it was possible. And I started looking around for gear. But I didn't really, I'm not very techie. And all the time, while I was looking for the gear, I was working on these questions. So my favorite podcast, Films to be Buried With by Brett Goldstein from Ted Lasso. Yeah. He had this format of 12 questions. So I got 12 questions and I wrote them and I worked on them for ages and ages. And while I was working on the questions, I was kind of collecting this gear and watching YouTube videos and how it worked or whatever the case would be. And a friend of mine, a sculptor called Etienne de Kock, his son had a little recording studio. And he said, why don't you talk to Benji? Mm-hmm. So, okay. I phoned Benji up and said, listen, dude, can you help me out? She said, come in, bring your gear. I'll show you how to work it. And he did. He even like gave me a speech with diagrams on how a microphone works. You know,
right.
this little magnet goes back and forth, and you know, and he looked at my gear and he let me set it up. And the first three shows he actually edited. But while he was doing that, he showed me how DaVinci worked, because right. I edit on DaVinci. So with that grounding, I paid him, you know, per hour for studio time, showed me how to use it. I interviewed his partner in the studio, another Ben, and we cut a little thing together. Then he cut the first three shows and then showed me how to work. And that was it. I was away, you know.
ChatGPT and a little bit of guidance from someone who's been there will work wonders, I think.
And also the thing is as well, is that those questions, right? I worked longer on trying to get those questions exactly perfect to get all the information. And by the third episode, I threw them away because they were just crap.
So do you feel that it lent too much of a kind of a predictable, boring structure to your show? Or did the conversations just naturally go elsewhere? I mean, they do with you. That's who you are.
The thing is that it stultified the conversation. You know, it's very interesting what you're saying about having discovered, you know, the crown jewels, but you haven't answered my question. The question is, you know what I mean? It's like, no, you just need to let it flow.
That's reportage. So, I mean, that's being a newspaper.
That's a very good word for it. It is reportage. We just followed the stream of consciousness, and it also allowed the guest to almost dictate the pace by just having a conversation. Where they wanted to go, I'd just follow and ask questions, you know?
So I think that's very interesting because, number one, I just interviewed Christo De Beer or Bas De Beer for his show, The Bas Cast. And one of the things that he said that stuck with me was never interrupt someone when they're saying something interesting. You know, just because that you've got a format for your show and a question to ask, like shut up and let them finish the thought. You know, in your show, it feels like it's not an information extraction engine, you know, because there's an ethos and an approach and an attitude that goes with owning a restaurant or working in the food industry that is as important as give me 10 hacks to get high quality produce for my restaurant. You know, that's not the kind of show you're making.
Exactly. And I'm not reviewing anyone. I'm not like saying I went and had a burger and it had cheese. No, we're just having a conversation about what this human does, you know, with food. Like I think at one stage you asked me like where the name comes from.
Yes.
Of right. So why it's called The Table in the Corner. And I mean, I see myself as an observer. I'm one of life's observers. I like to sit and watch people. I like to sit in a corner, and I will choose a table in the corner of a restaurant so I can sort of, you know, watch what's going on and observe. And so, I mean, lately I've come to understand that what the show is about is building an archive of the thoughts and impressions of the people in the food industry in Cape Town.
Right.
And hopefully, you know, I'd like to expand it to wider. But restaurants grow and disappear. Trends in food grow and disappear. And they're gone. But if they're gone, you can't learn anything from them if they're already gone. So I like to think that I'm building a little bit of an archive of a sort of a point in time or a point on the map of restaurants.
Right. So we talked about how you make your show. You use DaVinci. You record on location in restaurants near noisy kitchens as people are prepping. You also, I know, and I'm going to preempt you here in that you have used DaVinci's excellent sound cancellation to rescue quite a few recordings where there's clanging of pots and cars and all kinds of things going on. But when it comes to post-production, how many episodes do you release a month? What channels are you on? How do you promote the show? Let's start with that.
I use Buzzsprout. So I'm hosted on Buzzsprout, which is really so easy and user-friendly. I'm posting about 6 shows a month. So some weeks I'll do 2. And I try, if I'm doing it, I've tried different days, right? And somehow I don't think it's the truth that Tuesday and Thursday are the best days. I'm sure that like who my guest is has a huge effect on the downloads, But I've just decided that Tuesday and Thursday are the days. So I'll release an episode every single Tuesday. And sometimes if I've got a bonus thing, because I just can't help myself, and because I love doing this. Absolutely love doing it. So literally, if I could, I'd release one every day. Because basically I'm sitting down just having conversations with people I really like, you know.
Sure.
I'd also like to get it up to two a week.
This is out of left field, but I would argue that twice a week is a very heavy rotation for your listeners. You know, I listen to your show as a, I would say, semi-regular, as in twice a month I will listen to your episodes in general. And as a topic, because it's niche, I feel like two episodes a week, I would either be listening to, I'd be looking, picking and choosing back catalog episodes that I'm particularly interested in, but I would also feel like, oh, I can skip this one. There's so many that, you know, I don't have to catch every single one. Whereas with one a week, I can kind of go, okay, cool. I've listened to my other standards like Seth Godin's Akimbo or whatever it might be. And then now I'm ready, fueled and recharged for Table in the Corner again in the next week. Like, that's just an off-the-cuff response to the idea of doing 2 a week.
You have just caused me to consider something that I hadn't even entered my consciousness. So thank you. Because I realize with you saying that I'm just focused on doing something I'm loving and just do it, yay, and everyone will love it. But actually...
Yeah, more is better is definitely a trap.
I'm not doing it for more is better. I'm just doing it because I recorded it and I'm going to release it, you know, because it's edited. Yay, let's go. Let's see what it's like. And I do think I would be surprised if people listen to every single episode, because there are top chefs and there's like, you know, I interviewed a second year student at a cooking school who's from Burundi. It's not going to be interesting to everyone, but she's just so lovely. And it was so interesting to hear her perceptions of the industry, like starting out and what she wanted to get into doing. So that was fantastic. But I don't think Liam Tomlin's going to listen to that. And there are a lot of kind of people who follow fine dining chefs who will listen to Luke Dale Roberts, George Jardine, Liam Tom, they'll listen to those guys, but are they really, you know, are they going to listen to an interview, maybe out of curiosity, with George Jardine's son, but will they listen to my mate who owns the Field Kitchen, who does wedding catering? Why?
I don't know. Look, it depends on who you are, I suppose. Only your stats can maybe reveal that in your download numbers and all that kind of thing. But I, as a person who am interested in fine dining and food and the whole world behind it, I mean, you've spurred that interest. There are very few episodes that I feel like, oh, that's not interesting. Like, being someone who owns a franchise for Ocean Basket is interesting. So a supplier who's, you know, making organic food is interesting to me. Your show is for people who are interested in all aspects of food. So yes, there will be some casuals who are like, oh, Luke Dale Roberts, I'm going to his restaurant, let me listen to an interview. But I'm guessing that most of them are pretty regular, but that's just intuition. But here's my solution. Thursday, new show. Tuesday, Table in the Corner.
You see what you did there as the managing director of South African Podcasters Guild. Yeah,
you just keep calling me a chairman, and I didn't choose that for myself.
Oh, sorry. But look at that. You see, this is the value that you bring to us. Thank you, Jonathan.
Let's finish off with channels. You're on Instagram. You take rather nice pictures and videos of the people you're interviewing, so you share the show there. Where else are you spreading the word?
Nowhere. Okay, so in fact, let's catch it. So I only do reels. I only post reels. I record a reel. I put up a phone in front of my eye line, so people are talking to the camera, and I collect little clips, and I used to record the whole damn show. Now I just kind of push the button, and when I think I've got a clip, I stop because it's too much editing. And I use those clips of, you know, Luke talking about inspiration or whatever the case may be, just to promote the show. That has grown. I've just got like 2,000 and just go over 2,045 followers since I launched the channel in September 2023. And it's all organic. I don't, like, you know, I know I should, but when this show starts earning money, I'll start running ads, you know. And then there's a very, very good and well-followed Facebook group about Cape Town food. And Pam McConey, who runs it, is a very dear person. And I actually interviewed her on the show. She's so cool. And she lets me pop the link to the Spotify on the show on a weekly basis. I don't do it every week, but I can, you know. And that,
what's the name of the group? I have not heard of
it. It's called Cape Town Eats Group.
Okay.
And it was set up in, it's got like over 100,000 followers, and it was set up during COVID to help promote and bring attention. So it's a lot of people advertising, I'm doing salumis from home, come and get them, WhatsApp to order, or hi, I'm a barista looking for work, or whatever the case. People also review places on there, you know. So it's there's a lot going on, and but there's some really quality writing in there of reviews. And yeah, I mean, depending on who it is that I post. If I post the Ghanaian lady who does jollof, Ghana jollof, like I get 15 likes. And I don't know how many people follow the link and listen to the show. But then if I post Luke Dale Roberts commenting on something, I get like, you know, 100, 110, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
So it's just constantly building that awareness.
So that's your channels. You're on Instagram posting reels. You're in a Facebook group. 100,000 people is a lot. So maybe your audience is also on this Facebook group. Maybe there's a means through that to find support or subscription or something like that.
I hadn't thought of it, yeah.
Especially since you know the mod so well. But let us briefly touch on any exciting projects in the future.
Well, of course, the booze one. I have an idea for a booze thing, but it's not one where I just sit down and talk to someone about booze or about beverages of any sort. It's a double header where a friend of mine and I get a third party on and talk to them about their brewery or their gin distillery or rum or why dark rum instead of white rum or whatever the case would be, and learn about drinks in the industry. So, and it'll also be a bit of a challenge because having a third voice, you know, like two presenters and a third voice will present an interesting kind of scripting and
technical challenge. It's a dynamic that changes.
There's a way in which I started this for a specific reason. That was to reconnect myself with the industry that I love, right? But I'm starting to become aware that there's other opportunities that maybe I can be the guy that does food related podcasts and people can come to me and get that service from me. So I could earn a living doing that.
Yeah. And then cigars.
So I want to keep pushing myself to learn stuff.
I mean, obvious step is let's do table in the corner for booze, but here's an opportunity to learn and grow and try a new format. And I should definitely grab it. Before we wrap up, I would just like to ask you what kind of advice you have for new podcasters or any podcasters. What's worked for you really well that you find an important part of your process?
Just a simple piece of advice and kind of adapted from something I've said to people in the past is just get on the bus. You have to do it. You have to just make a show. All right. So that's the simple thing. Just do it. But there's a lot of stuff that you have to kind of muddle through and think about The technical stuff you can learn, the technical stuff you can get someone to show you, the technical stuff you can contact the Podcasters Guild and find somebody to help you. The most important thing is to choose to do something you know about, you know, that you know stuff about, and be prepared. Because, like, I've carry my gear and I've got a little backpack and it's all packed in there. But that's secondary to the fact that you have to rock up and show your guest the respect of being prepared. For me, that comes from a lifetime and early work as a journalist. the stuff that you wrote had to be kind of well-researched. So even though I think that having worked a lot in this industry in a whole lot of different spheres, I know a lot about food, I research my guest. I research what they've been doing and then go and find out if they've been doing the tomato-based bouillabaisse. I say, okay, are you using San Marzano tomatoes, whatever the case be, just so that they know that I've taken the trouble.
Yeah, and they're not kind of dealing with a layer of anxiety, like, does this person know anything about me? And are the questions going to be difficult for me to answer? If they feel like you know about them kind of already, then they feel like they're going to get asked questions that they, you know, that they can answer. So I think that's very important. I hate a show where it's just like, so who are you? What do you do?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's pointless. And the thing is that I have taken of late to taking an A4 sheet with 12 questions on it. They're not the original 12 questions that I spoke about earlier, but with a bunch of questions that I can refer to. And even if I don't even glance at them the whole time, the person sitting opposite me sees that I've got the questions, so I've come prepared. So it just sets them at ease, you know? So I think that's a very important thing.
Very interesting. Like the psychology of guest management, I suppose. And it's very easy to forget as well when you're relatively comfortable in front of a microphone that a lot of people aren't. Especially, it's amazing how things change when you put video into the mix. And here's another element of the audio versus video thing. And I personally find when I put a camera on myself and I know that I'm going to use that footage, I turn into a complete moron. So that's one of the reasons I don't dabble in as much video as some others do. But our time is done. Russell, thank you very much for this second take of our interview, because I flagrantly ruined the first recording.
No, you didn't. I did. We're talking too much.
We both agree that we're terrible at what we do, and we managed to muddle through a second recording quite well. So thanks for your time, dude, and looking forward to seeing much more growth from you. That is it for this episode of How to Make a Podcast in South Africa. Stay tuned for more interviews with the rest of our very interesting members. Russell, thanks again.
Thank you.